Hello, and welcome to the Rules of the Game podcast, where it is my job to discuss and compare democratic institutions. With Jan Renner, I discuss current developments of direct democracy in Germany, and especially in Bavaria, his home state. Bavaria is the most advanced German federal state when it comes to direct democracy. Jan explains the specific tools that are available and how Mehr Demokratie, the organization he's working for, tries to change the rules of direct democracy to make citizen participation and decision-making easier and better. He shares with us the strategies they pursue and obstacles they face. One of the huge success stories was the popular petition called Save the Bees to protect biodiversity in Bavaria. This initiative garnered a record of 1.8 million signatures of citizens and became law in 2019, approved by the Bavarian parliament upon huge pressure from the people. As Germany is indeed a vibrant direct democracy at the communal and regional level, we talk about developments of direct democracy in the various German states and how he sees the role of citizens' assemblies as a tool to push for more direct democracy and improving deliberation in society. Germany is still the only EU country that has not yet seen a nationwide referendum. We dig into the historical reasons for this fact and what the current opinions, options and pushbacks are for direct democracy at the federal level. Jan Renner is the executive director of Mehr Demokratie, More Democracy in Bavaria. What I love about his story is how he became a young activist for direct democracy when he joined protest movements that made him more aware of what is wrong with the political system, and so he joined the Organization for More Democracy and climbed its ranks. Jan studied political science, sociology and history in Augsburg and Oslo. I am your host, Stefan Kiburz, and this is the 36th episode of the Rules of the Game podcast. I am a political economist with a PhD in economics from the University of Bern in Switzerland, and I previously held positions at the London School of Economics and Political Science and the Center for Global Development. You find a full transcript of this episode on my website, rulesofthegame.blog. I am always curious to hear your opinion, so please send me an email to stefan.kiburz@gmail.com. A great way to support my podcast is to leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. So if you want to do me a favor, please rate the podcast on your favorite platform. If you find my discussions interesting and you'd like to support my work, consider buying me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com, and you find a link to it on my website rulesofthegame.blog. Now please enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with Jan Renner. Jan Renner, welcome to the Rules of the Game podcast. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Stefan. Thank you so much.
So what is your first memory of democracy?
My first memory of democracy. I think I would have to say the very first memory I have or that comes to mind is actually accompanying my parents when they went to the electoral booth back in the days when there was an election coming up, or actually on election day, basically on a Sunday. I would always come with them to the local restaurant in my very, very small village. It's basically the center of the village. And yeah, there basically the entire village would meet up and people would just go into the electoral booths, vote, and then come out of the booths, talk about it, and have like a very interesting dynamic going on in this particular village. And I remember as a little child coming with them being like, wow, that's interesting. And of course, I didn't really know, or I wasn't able to comprehend the sphere of what was happening, right? But nevertheless, I think it was just interesting to see what's happening there. It seemed so important in a way, without really knowing what exactly it meant. But I think that was something that really struck me, the sense of importance and how this local restaurant just turned or transformed for this particular day into like a voting center. So I remember that was really interesting from a visitor point of view, or from somebody who can only take part in it by experiencing it and not really actively engaging with it. I think in that regard, when it comes to real actively practicing democracy, my first experience and my first memory was electing class representatives in school. I guess that's a very, very basic form of democratic participation. And maybe in that moment, I wasn't really aware that this can be seen in like a really democratic point of view. But nevertheless, then again, it felt like important to vote for somebody. So that was my first memories, voting myself and watching my parents vote.
Actually, I had similar memories of going with my parents to the voting booth, which was in our case, it was at the school. You know, it was my primary school that turned into an election center on the weekends. And I also remember that it was something, you know, important that my parents went there. And I remember how they put the ballot in the box, you know, like old school. Today, I think mostly we have mail-in ballots, so we can vote and elect via mail, which is much simpler and quite convenient, actually.
And also maybe to add on that just quickly, I also always found it really fascinating to then, when we went home after the electoral process, so to speak, to then turn on the television and see the TV programs about the polls coming in and politicians from various parties analyzing the result of it, and me kind of knowing that what my parents did in the morning had somehow an impact on what these people were talking on television later on. So that I think was really fascinating to me.
And did your parents also already have direct democratic decisions that they were participating in at the local level?
I'm quite sure they had. I don't remember one in particular, but we're going to talk about this later on. I grew up in the state of Bavaria, and there it's quite common to vote on local referendums and use direct democracy or to partake in it. And so I'm quite sure that they voted on some direct democratic initiatives, but I can't remember one in particular, but I'm quite sure they did.
In your bio, you write that you demonstrated against the introduction of EU free trade agreements, and that was something where you became really political active. Can you maybe share that activation, I would say, with us?
Yeah, I remember back when I was, I don't know, 15, 16, I think that's kind of when it started. That's when also a treaty called ACTA, A-C-T-A, I had to look it up, Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement. That's when the ACTA treaty was widely discussed. And I remember that back in the days, I was very much into video games and being active in the internet sphere. Back then, it was a huge discussion on, does ACTA mean that we're going to have a limited ways of expressing ourselves on the internet? Are multinational companies now able to just cut short our internet in a way? That was the big selling point against ACTA. And that's what kind of motivated me to go out on the streets and really protest this lack of. And also then I wasn't really aware of this at the ACTA protest, but then later on in the CETA or TTIP demonstrations, that these EU trade agreements, they are not really designed for us to partake in them, to even have a say against them, because some of them were EU only. So nobody really knew who was involved in actually discussing about or negotiating these trade agreements, which have huge impacts on our daily lives. And that's when I really noticed, I do want to have a say in this, or at least I want to know who's involved in this. I want to maybe elect those people who then negotiate in my favor in these agreements or in these negotiations. So that was really a big moment for me, where I realized, we as people, we should have a say in especially these major topics. And that's why it really kind of politicized me. I also was very much aware of the lack of transparency that these processes had, that these trade agreement negotiation processes involved. And I got kind of angry during this process. And funnily enough, this is where I came across Mehr Demokratie, the organization that I'm now working for, because they were also, especially in around 2015, 2016, they were very active in the no CETA or TTIP talks and campaignings. So that's how I got involved with them.
And you are now the executive director of the Bavaria branch of the organization. So the organization is called Mehr Demokratie, which is more democracy. And it's a German-wide association. And they have different branches in different states. And you are in Bavaria. Can you maybe talk a bit about your work and a bit about the organization, what you're doing and what you're trying to achieve, maybe both at the subnational and the national level?
So Mehr Demokratie has been around for 30 plus years. And it really started as a grassroots organization, I would say, just some people who were motivated by the idea of participating on the national level, of actually establishing something like a nationwide referendum, which to this day is not established in Germany, which is still the main goal of Mehr Demokratie, is to actually work towards achieving this goal. But while these people 30 years ago, while they realized, okay, maybe getting this nationwide referendum is not necessarily the next step, we should take smaller steps in order to get there. So why not start at the communal level and see how can we establish direct democracy there, gather some experiences, which then further help us to, in the future, actually establish the nationwide referendum. And this is then how Mehr Demokratie kind of got formed, starting really at the local level, trying to establish direct democracy in all over Germany in the on the communal level, which at this point is the case in all 16 federate states of Germany. You, as a people living in a village, can now actually use direct democracy to change certain laws in that village. So the direct democracy on communal level and also on the subnational level is possible in every single German state, which is also one achievement of Mehr Demokratie.
Mehr Demokratie is the main organization that is driving this push for more direct democracy.
Yes. And I would say also that's, we do like twofold work. Because on the one hand, we are pushing for legislation. So we are drafting laws. We also lobby with politicians in order to improve the regulations for direct democracy in all the German states. So that's one big chunk of what we do for direct democracy. But on the other hand, Mehr Demokratie is the only body which advises local citizen initiatives. So we, if you want to start a citizen initiative, say in the state of Bavaria, you can call us. We will give you all the advice you need, whether that's legal advice, campaigning advice, but maybe also on how you should structure your campaign. So that's really, especially here in Bavaria, that is one of the main things we do, is to really give advice to those initiatives on how to set up their campaign. Because as much as direct democracy is for the people, it's actually at times quite difficult to use because you need to really take care of some regulations. There's some phrases that you need to be aware of that need to be put into the law and stuff like that. It can be quite complicated, to be honest. And hence, this is why we are there to help those initiatives.
I was actually surprised when I read a bit more on the case in Bavaria, like the procedure that you have, the institution itself, the process of direct democracy. I'm used to, you know, people collecting signatures and this will cause a vote, or either in an initiative or a referendum, right? That's kind of how I know it from Switzerland. But in Bavaria, you have like a three-step. First, people collect signatures, and that will bring the proposal to the parliament. And then people have to go to the local administration to sign. Maybe you say something about this process, and is that something you try to improve? Or is that meaningful in that sense, the three steps?
You're right. In Bavaria, we have a three-step system, unlike, as you just mentioned, for instance, in Switzerland. And in the very first step, if we're talking about statewide initiatives, an initiative needs to collect 25,000 signatures, to the minimum. And what they then do is they hand it over to the ministry. And the ministry will then check if the content of this initiative violates the law. Through this process, you can actually prohibit things that I think are not possible in Switzerland, or are possible in Switzerland, that you could actually, with the citizen initiative, do something against minorities, or actually that violates minority rules. And this, for instance, is not possible in Germany, or even in that particular case in Bavaria, because the ministry at a very early point in this entire direct democratic process checks whether this initiative violates the law or not. So this is why you have the very first step. If the ministry then actually checks and says, all right, this initiative is all good to go, then the second phase comes, which is the actual citizen initiative. And what the second step is, 1 million people in Bavaria need to, as you just mentioned, need to go to their local administrations in order to sign this initiatives within 14 days. So that's quite a huge threshold, to be honest. Not many initiatives actually manage to pass this threshold. And only after this 1 million people, the minimum, sign up for this initiatives, then it gets to the parliament. And then the parliament can decide whether they want to accept it or whether to deny it. And when they deny it, you will have a vote on this particular initiative. And so that's the three-step model.
Only when the parliament rejects it, then the people still have the chance to actually enact it by voting yes, right?
Exactly.
But the threshold is like 10%. So 10% of the electorate needs to go to the local administration and sign. That seems like a very high hurdle. And I think that's also the reason why you don't have so many proposals coming through, right?
Absolutely. That is a major, major hurdle. And you need a really big alliance in a way in order to pass this hurdle. And that's, yeah, as you said, that's why only a few initiatives actually get to this point or even further, because this hurdle is quite high. And we as Mehr Demokratie, we are actively trying to reduce this hurdle to say 7%, maybe even 5%, but at least to lower it a bit in order to enhance the possibility for people to use direct democracy in the way that it's meant to be, as a way for citizens to actually put political agendas on the map.
Do you also know something like a referendum where parliament implements a law and then you collect signatures to stop the law, to provoke a public vote on it?
You are basically referring to is it facultative referendum? Is that the term in Switzerland?
Exactly, that's it.
No, unfortunately, at least in the state of Bavaria, we don't have this. I think in Saxony, which is a different state in Bavaria, they are looking into it and are thinking about implementing it. But in Bavaria, we do not have this option. But this would be something that could greatly help, I think, direct democracy in Bavaria as well. And that's something that we are advocating for as well, because we believe that this is quite a good instrument on having the people engaging with politicians. And also for politicians, I think they will draft law differently or act differently, do different policies when they know that the people then have the chance to revoke their decision.
Exactly. I think that's a very important mechanism that often is not paid enough attention to, you know, that politicians draft legislation differently if they know that people can reject the whole legislation.
Absolutely.
Each state in Germany, they have their own type of direct democracy. You say all the states have some form. What states are, like, in your view, the most advanced, and what are kind of success stories that you could tell?
That's not because I'm biased, since I am living in Bavaria and working for the Bavarian branch, but actually Bavaria is one of the, maybe the most advanced state within Germany when it comes to direct democracy. Roughly 40% of all direct democratic activity happening in Germany is located in Bavaria. And most of that is actually located on the communal sphere, on the communal level. And that is the reason why that is. In 1995, Bavarians themselves actually used direct democracy, used the three-step model that we just described, in order to implement direct democracy on the communal level. So the rules and regulations we have for direct democracy on the communal level are designed by the citizens themselves, which is the reason why they are, compared to other states in Germany, kind of user-friendly, if you will, why the hurdles are somewhat lower than in other states, or also why there are hardly any themes or topics you are not allowed to use in a referendum on the communal level. In Bavaria, there's like a rule of thumb where any theme or any topic that can be discussed in a city hall is also eligible for a citizen initiative to cover, which is definitely not the case in other states of Germany, where there's quite exclusive topics that you are allowed to touch upon with the citizen initiative, while others you are not allowed to use. So in Bavaria, you are basically open to use direct democracy in, I would say, almost anything you like on the communal level. Of course, there are some regulations come into play, as I mentioned before. How is the particular question that you're raising signatures for, or that you're collecting signatures for? It needs to be phrased in a particular way. And of course, once ink is dried on a contract, it's kind of difficult to use direct democracy against it. But still, in all of the processes before that, you are free to use direct democracy in Bavaria on the communal level, especially also that is an exception for Bavaria, especially in terms of communal construction plans, which is always a very, very hot topic in communes and in villages. And in Bavaria, you're allowed to basically use direct democracy in almost any phase of a communal construction plan, whereas in other states, communal construction plans are completely excluded from direct democratic interaction. That's why Bavaria in itself is or has been a forerunner in terms of direct democracy in Germany. Other states are taking huge steps as well. For instance, Thuringia, which is in the eastern part of Germany, they are really getting along and catching up. But you also, and now I finally address the second part of your question, you are also interested in good examples of direct democracy. And one of the most recent ones, especially in Bavaria, is one, a statewide initiative that was in 2019. It's called Save the Bees. That's the abbreviation for it, or the title that has been claimed. And the aim of this initiative was really to secure the development of biodiversity in flora and fauna in Bavaria, because the people were seeing that the state government wasn't really paying attention all too much in that regard. And so this initiative, yeah, set up to change that and to really put it on the agenda of the state government. And we were discussing earlier the high hurdle in the second step of the citizen initiative process, where you actually need to collect 1 million signatures in the span of 14 days. This Save the Bees campaign was able to get 1.8 million people, so almost double, if you will, during the span of 14 days to go to their local administrations and sign up for this initiative, which is by far the most popular citizen initiative in the state of Bavaria to date. And the state government didn't even want to actually let it pass to a vote, because they actually saw that there is so much power behind this initiative. So many people are in favor of this initiative that the state government then basically gave in a way. And now we have this Save the Bees law.
So the parliament felt the pressure from 1.8 million signatures. How many people live in Bavaria?
In Bavaria, there are 13 million people, and around about 10 million are eligible to vote.
Okay, so that's really like a lot of votes, because comparing again to Switzerland, we have to collect 100,000 signatures within 18 months to cause an initiative to be successfully submitted. And we are like 8.5 million. We have, you know, the electorate, but it's still like this hurdle is huge, right? Is there anything in the process going on where you're trying to change that hurdle, where you feel it could work?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, next year in 2023, we have state elections in Bavaria. So this, as an NGO, as an organization, obviously that's one of the highlights. And only so often do you get the chance to really get politicians to commit to change, right? And so we are now in the phase of actively trying to come up with new ideas to really improve, especially the second step, the 1 million signatures collecting phase. And we are now more and more looking into e-collecting. I know that's also a very touchy and hot topic, but we are really looking into it because we do think that this could be a chance to improve the chances of initiatives when it comes to collecting signatures, maybe not only in the second step, but also in the first step, where they need to collect at least 25,000 signatures. So we are more and more looking into that, talking to administrations about that, because also, if you think about it, the 1 million signatures, if you do it just in your local administrations, these administrations then via mail need to send these papers back and forth all the way, which is also not really ideal in terms of administrative work. These people are also paid to do something else rather than just, you know, sending paper through the entire state. And also there needs to be obviously one human to really check whether this person is eligible to sign this initiative. And this doesn't really compare, because the state of Berlin is not only the capital, but it's also its own state. And in the state of Berlin, you can also do citizen initiatives and direct democratic votes. And in 2021, they had a very interesting referendum there. Prior to this, they, of course, had a citizen initiative as well. And that was to expropriate huge companies that are owning private housing in Berlin. So it's the expropriation of especially one company called Deutsche Wohnen. And for this initiative, they actually found out that in order to collect 280,000 signatures, it cost the administration around 500,000 euros. So that's the amount of money that is being spent on administrations checking whether these people are actually eligible to sign this initiative, etc. And now if you think about how easy it would be if you had e-collecting, there wouldn't be hardly any costs. No personnel would be needed, or hardly any personnel would be needed in order to really check these signatures. And it's also just a matter of seconds rather than weeks. I know in terms of safety and security, there's also some issues there, but we are now in the phase of really trying to come up with ideas and concepts on how to improve that, and also then how to basically lower the hurdle, if you will, for the 1 million signatures. And in other states, we are seeing first steps in this regard. For instance, the state of Schleswig-Holstein, which is in the very northern part of Germany, bordering Denmark, well, they are now in the process of implementing ways how you can collect signatures digitally and then maybe have them transferred to a citizen initiative. So yeah, this is basically what we are now working towards in terms of the second step for the citizen initiatives on statewide direct democratic initiatives.
Yeah, digitalization seems to be more like a matter of time, right? So it will come, I think, eventually, because yeah, you could save so much money, but obviously the trust and the security is super important, because you don't want to have a process that people don't really trust in, because then it's having more harm than doing good. Do you, on the other side, also put pressure on political parties to include direct democratic rule changes in their campaign promises before elections?
Yes, that's what we do. We actively seek politicians who are basically in these commissions, or who are the ones in their political parties and their fractions who are able to speak on these matters, and lobbying with them even in non-electoral periods. We lobby, but also, of course, especially in pre-election phases, we actively go towards these people and advise them or tell them, especially also from our experiences, right? As we are the only ones, especially in Bavaria, we are Mehr Demokratie is the only body, the only organization that has direct contact to citizen initiatives, or to most of them, at least almost all of them, I would say, whether that's statewide level or communal level. We are the only ones collecting data. Even the Ministry of Interior Affairs in Bavaria, they don't have the numbers on how many citizen initiatives, whether on communal or on statewide level, there actually are in Bavaria. They're always asking us, because we are the ones who take notes, store that data and collect that data. So from this experience and with this wealth of data, I think we can quite convincingly tell politicians why we think certain hurdles are too high, or how you can actually improve on certain regulations. And maybe just to add this point, because this is something that's been coming up in the political activism scene, but also in the direct democratic scene, I'm noticing, is the question of citizen assemblies. We as Mehr Demokratie, we took part in the Global Forum on Modern Direct Democracy, which took place in Lucerne in September.
I was there, actually.
Oh, really?
We haven't met, but...
No, yeah. That's interesting. Cool. I mean, maybe it would be interesting to hear your perspective on this, but I gathered, or at least I really was surprised on this conference that was so, at least from my point of view, that was so focused, obviously, on direct democracy, how often we were talking about citizen assemblies and how you can maybe enrich the process of direct democracy through an instrument like a citizen assembly, how more dialogue or deliberate democracy, how these processes can be intertwined with direct democratic instruments. And this is, just to now get back to my initial point, this is something that we also want to stress to politicians in this upcoming electoral phase, is to really think about improving direct democratic structures by making way also for, say, a citizen assembly prior to a referendum, or to maybe have, through direct democracy, through a citizen initiative, be able to implement, to establish a citizen assembly on a certain topic. So one main point for us will really be to, yeah, I guess, talk to politicians about the possibilities that the combination of these two instruments, direct democracy and citizen assemblies, how this can help democracy and politics further on.
Yeah, my opinion on citizens' assembly is twofold. On the one side, I think they can have a supporting role, in the sense that deliberation is important, and they could maybe also an instrument in Switzerland prior to popular votes to have a forum of deliberation. But this, for me, would only really work if the content and the deliberation would also be available to the rest of society. So I think Swiss society is quite politicized, so there are so many instruments where people can actually engage and to become like also active in political parties, you know, the hurdles are quite low, I would say. So for me, citizens' assembly, because they're based on sortition, the people have to be kind of hoping that they are selected in a way to actually deliberate. And for me, it's kind of a bit controversial with the principle of democracy, where if you have great ideas, if you want to participate, just go and do it. You know, that's kind of my approach. That's why I think the role for citizens' assemblies to me seems like rather limited. And I feel it's much more important to have a lot of direct democratic decisions. I would rather see that than seeing more citizens' assemblies. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that citizen assemblies are the solution to every problem we have. Also, maybe problems or hurdles with direct democracy. It's just that very often we also, as an NGO advocating for more direct democracy, the claim is always there. Yeah, but in the end, direct democratic decisions are always based on yes or no questions. And I think in order to kind of go against this claim, you could say, well, but if you put a citizen assembly prior to a vote, you actually have a lot of discussion that then, of course, in the end, it leads to a yes or no decision. But there's so much more deliberation prior to this that it's actually it's not an issue of yes or no in the end anymore. It's really, you can also produce alternatives, right? If you have a citizen assembly and then there's a popular vote afterwards, why not have three decisions to vote upon instead of just one in the end? So I think it does help, or it could potentially help the entire process of direct democracy if you put citizen assemblies prior to this. And also maybe just to add to this from a more like strategic point of view, in Bavaria, direct democracy really functions well. People are aware of it. As I said, roughly 40% of all direct democratic initiatives are happening in Bavaria, but on the national level, nobody or hardly anyone really talks about direct democracy currently. Brexit was a major step back.
Yeah, sadly enough, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then also we have a right-wing party in the national parliament since 2017, I believe, who are also spreading false information on the use of direct democracy as well, and false hopes. And all of this leads to a atmosphere of very much denial of the chances of direct democracy on the national level. However, almost or every major party in Germany is very much in favor of citizen assemblies. This is something that they think can really enrich politics on the national level. And now for us as an NGO trying to advocate for direct democracy, being able to talk to politicians on the national level, on all levels really, but now especially on the national level, to talk with them about citizen assemblies opens up new opportunities for us to also introduce the idea of direct democracy. Because in the end, all discussions about citizen assemblies come to the question, well, but in the end, it's only recommendations, right? What's the sense of this? And then you can actually say, well, if we had a nationwide referendum, then the claim that citizen assemblies only recommend is basically, it's not valid anymore, because you know that people then through a nationwide referendum could also vote on these recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, if people through citizens' assembly realize that they want to have more democracy, I mean, I would totally be in favor of that. I think the citizens' assemblies, in a way, are limited in power, while direct democracy is very powerful. And that's why it's so important to talk about the rules and, you know, how you implement direct democracy. In most places where direct democracy is used regularly and, you know, in a systematic way, most people, I think, are in favor of it. But it depends on how you implement it. Like in California, for example, there, you know, they have a lot of proposals, ballot proposals, and people are kind of overwhelmed, and then they think that doesn't make sense, or at least some, you know, I don't know the situation in detail, but that's kind of my perception of it.
Interestingly enough, by the way, polls in Germany since, I guess, the mid-70s show that the majority of the German population is also in favor of the nationwide referendum. But still, we through various reasons, we are not there yet. Hopefully, we will get there. As I said, currently, it's not really looking that bright, because also the Green Party, who for basically since its inception, also in the mid-70s, late 70s, I believe, they stated that they were definitely in favor of the nationwide referendum. However, then in 2020, end of 2020, they decided to actually get rid of that that claim. And we hosted a discussion between two Green Party politicians. One was very much in favor, who's also from Bavaria, who's very much in favor of the Green Party, still advocating for the nationwide referendum, and one major Green politician who was against the Greens, still wanting the nationwide referendum. And his arguments were just the same as I mentioned before: Brexit, like the right-wing party, populists' claims and stuff like that. And as you said, I think it all comes down to how do you design the rules? What are the regulations? If you regulate this instrument in a way that populists will not be able to just misuse it as they did in Britain, then this can be very much enhancing rather than threatening democracy.
Yeah, exactly. It's super important. And one problem with the Brexit vote was definitely that it was top down, that it was used by politicians for their own, I mean, by David Cameron for his own agenda. And he obviously hoped that people would say no, that people wanted to stay in the European Union, but his gamble didn't really go his way. And I think in Germany, the great thing is that at the state level, you have a lot of direct democracy. There's a lot of experimentation. And I think it's important for the people to understand how it works, even before maybe it comes to the national level, right? And so let's talk a bit more about the national level. Since Germany had like two, I would say, opportunities, and correct me if I'm wrong, to implement direct democracy. One was after World War II, when there was a new basic law, a new constitution written. And then in 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell and Germany was reunified, that was kind of a second opportunity. And there are actually two possibilities for a national popular vote, right? One would be a change in the constitution, or an overall change in the constitution, and the other one would be territorial changes. Can you maybe say something about these two options, and also maybe historically, you know, what happened that Germany did not end up with using direct democracy more often at the national level?
I actually don't know too much about these two options, but I do know that Germany is the only EU member state that so far has not seen a nationwide referendum. And as you said, there were maybe two opportunities to actually introduce that. But after World War II, I very much believe that the fear that also the interwar period in Germany, the so-called Weimarer Republic, there was a fear after World War II that you would still have sort of unstable political coalitions and very much, you know, just political upheaval and stuff like that, which actually, if you look at it, the Weimarer, so the interwar period, the Weimar Republic, there were hardly any referendum or initiatives, but still people were thinking, oh, this was the reason why the Nazis then came to power in the early 1930s. Which if you look at it, that wasn't really the fault of direct democratic initiatives or the possibility of direct democracy, but still it was very much linked to that idea. And then after the war, starting from the mid 40s up until like, I guess, the 70s, 80s, it was really about regaining trust in democracy itself, in state institutions, in democratic institutions. I do think that was the main focus. And that's why during that time, at least, hardly anyone said we would need a nationwide referendum. There was no real action towards or movement towards that idea.
And Germany did really well, right, in terms of democracy, in terms of representative democracy. I mean, the system became very, very stable and also successful in, I would say, overall. Obviously, there is always question about inequality, etc., but overall in economic terms.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. And maybe also why, or because Germany did so well in economic terms, nobody or hardly anyone really felt the necessity to go against, in brackets, but to really push for a referendum and nationwide, because most of them were somewhat happy with how things were in Germany during that time. But then maybe in the late 70s, early 80s, when protest movement really began, I mean, in Western Germany, but also in particular in the eastern part of Germany, that's, I think, when claims for nationwide referendums really came about and grew stronger in Germany. As I said, the polls during that time also then showed that starting from then up until now, the majority of the Germans are actually in favor of establishing the nationwide referendum. Then after the fall of the Berlin Wall, there was a second opportunity, as you said. So the commission for the reunification of Germany, there was a constitutional commission that tried to figure out how to actually reunite these two countries. And this commission, they were actually in favor of setting up a nationwide referendum for the then reunified Germany. However, this claim didn't make it past the two-third majority rule in the German parliament back then. So that's why it during that time didn't happen. But this was a major push for then trying to establish direct democracy on the communal level, among other things. And so while these two points in history, especially the last one for the reunification, while that one didn't really click in terms of setting up a nationwide referendum, I think it really, really pushed the buttons for people to try to get their voting right in the communal and statewide level.
And also looking at the European Union, I guess, you know, direct democracy is becoming more of a hot topic. I would say that countries look at each other and say like, oh, they have had a referendum on this treaty and they had a referendum on this. So I think that will also push and give more kind of a promotion to direct democracy, right? Are you like connected with other organizations in other countries?
Oh, yeah, we are. We are very much connected with people in Switzerland, organizations in Switzerland. And I know in the Netherlands, we are very much connected with people. There's a Austrian branch of Mehr Demokratie, which is somehow, which we support, obviously. So there's definitely connections to other organizations in other countries. And speaking of Switzerland, of course, Switzerland, for everybody who's interested in advocating for direct democracy, always has a look at what the Swiss are doing. And hence, especially in Bavaria, we are not only because we are geographically fairly close compared to other states in Germany, but yeah, that's where we also get a lot of inspiration, I would say, for direct democracy. Also, because the Bavarian constitution, the state constitution, is heavily influenced by the Swiss. So the founding fathers of the constitution of the Bavarian state, they took refuge in the Swiss exile during World War II. And when they came back, they were so influenced by the Swiss direct democratic system that they tried to implement some forms of what they saw in Switzerland into the Bavarian constitution. So yeah, there's definitely historically, but also currently, exchange and overlaps with international organizations and partners.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I didn't know that about Bavaria. And so at the national level, what would be technically the hurdle? We would need a change in the basic law, right, of Germany. And this could only happen through parliament, right?
Yeah.
And what would be the hurdles?
I think it would just, you would need a change in basic law. The constitution, actually, that's also very interesting. I do believe there are entire libraries being written about that particular part of the German constitution, because technically, it doesn't disallow referendums to happen. I think it's section 20, where it says there are elections are being held in Germany, but also other mechanisms of voting, I guess you could loosely translate it. And this particular part, other mechanisms of voting, is what we as Mehr Demokratie and other people as well could see as like the loophole in order to establish direct democracy on the national level. And so, yeah, it would be possible. There would just need to be the political will for it. And in the past, especially since the reunification of Germany, I think almost every legislation period, there have been some efforts to try to establish or to some initiatives in parliament to actually establish the nationwide referendum. But all of them have been declined. I remember also the last government prior to the now existing one. So this was from 2017 to 2021. It's the so-called big coalition. So the conservatives and the social democrats are in power, and they, in their coalition agreement, they promised to hold a commission on direct democracy and further citizen engagement. But this commission never was put into place. Of course, granted, there was a unprecedented health crisis coming in halfway through the legislation period, but still was kind of disappointing for us to see that this commission actually failed to happen and didn't. So there was no real progress in that sense. And this could also be seen as a point for somebody like us to say, okay, you know what, direct democracy currently on the national level is not the main topic. It's important that we are there to remind politicians that this could be or would be a major step forward for German democracy. But we also need to acknowledge that maybe right as of right now, other means, for instance, citizen assemblies are what the politicians in parliament are more looking towards, which the current government actually does. So there's in the coalition agreement of the current government, the citizen assemblies are featured. And for this legislation period, which takes 4 years, there will be 3 citizen assemblies actually introduced by the parliament itself. So that's a cool step forward. But let's see how this goes.
My worry, as I mentioned before, is that I think citizens' assemblies could almost become like an excuse for parliamentarians. They say, oh, you know, the citizens are already involved. What else do you want, right? But it doesn't give really power to the citizens in the end. Because usually, first of all, they're almost always advisory. And second of all, it's not the people that decide, right? It's a very small selection, random selection of people that is there, you know? And so it's not for everyone.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And this is also why we say citizen assemblies could never be the only tool, so to speak, right? As of right now, we say this could be a gateway into talking about direct democracy on the national level. But we also say if there is a citizen assembly, it needs to be very clear how these recommendations, how these advisory boards, how these things are then turned into policy. Or if not, the government needs to really clearly state why they wouldn't accept these this particular recommendations from citizen assemblies. But as you said, it's not the end of it all, or it's not the final solution, citizen assembly.
Yeah, but it could be a step on the way for sure. So interestingly also that a lot of constitutions actually allow, you know, for direct democratic participation, but often those articles are like dormant, you know, they're not used or the hurdles are too high. Actually, there is an interesting example. Also, Taiwan. Taiwan had direct democracy in its first constitution very early on, but it was never really used. And I think the hurdles were just too high. And then suddenly the people said, like, okay, why don't we, you know, lower these hurdles to actually make that article that was all, it was there all the time, you know, never used really. And they made it useful in the end. And now it's a very vibrant direct democracy. So if there is already, you know, a foot in the door, it's always easier to get in.
But I do think it's interesting how it just struck me as you were mentioning this, how sometimes certain things that are put in the constitution, well, it's been overlooked for so many years. And then once in a while, somebody looks into it, but like, oh, that's in our constitution. We could actually do something with it. That's what happened with the expropriation citizen initiative in Berlin that took place last year. Because the German constitution actually allows for expropriation, but just for a lot of years, no one has ever really took it to use or used it. And now they were like, hey, it's actually the constitution allows for something like this. So why not use it as a referendum or an initiative first, a citizen initiative? It just struck me, as you said, it is there, but you just also have to use it.
So for people all around the world, go back and read your constitution. Do you have any books or articles you could recommend on your work or direct democracy or more generally?
Yeah, I do fear though that most of them will be in German. So sorry for all our international listeners.
Yeah, I'll put them there anyway. And also translation tools are getting better and better.
That's true. So one political scientist who needs to be mentioned here is Ottmar Jung. He has been, I think he devoted almost his entire life, I would say, to researching a direct democracy in Germany from a legal point of view, but also from a political science point of view. So he's definitely worth mentioning. And also not to give ourselves a pat on the back or to self-plug ourselves here, but we as Mehr Demokratie, we issue reports on a yearly basis on the state of direct democracy, whether that's on the statewide levels or also on the communal levels. We also put out other reports on the European Union and direct democracy. Basically, everything we work on, we also put out reports. And especially in the terms of direct democracy, we have a political scientist working for us. So that's also why we claim not to be just activists, but also to have like a scientific approach to our work that we do. So there are multiple reports and other issues that we are working on, which will be featured in some sort of publication that we do.
Thanks a lot. I'll put this all in the show notes and also check out these other academics. I think it's important to have scientific underlying for arguments, et cetera, et cetera. I wish there would be more design thinking in general in political science. But yeah, so Jan Reinert, thanks a lot for taking the time. I really appreciated it. And I wish you all the best with your work. And hopefully we can have another conversation maybe at some later point in time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Stefan. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode. I really appreciate you've taken the time. If you enjoyed it and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and a review. It really helps my message to get heard. If you have suggestions for future episodes or feedback on the podcast, don't hesitate to contact me by email at stefan.kyberts@gmail.com. I'll put my email address in the show notes. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Twitter at Skybirds, that's SKYBURZ, and on LinkedIn. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.